Right. No. For the benefit of those people listening to this on the recording, that is not you. Or at least I hope it is not you. At least not now. For those that are listening to this on the recording, I have given out an outline sheet of the topics we are going to be covering. You don't need to know that on the recording. You'll just follow along in the shiur. However, what you do need to know, and you all in the room also need to know, is when this is all over, I am giving you the notes. So those of you that are note takers, not for the purpose of attention, but for, oh my God, I need to have it. I am not looking at anyone in particular. You do not need to sit there. What did you say? Because I am giving it all to you. Not only am I giving it all to you, I am giving it to you. This is, I guess you could call it the Shiur Rabbi Katz with the Piskei Rabbi Lerner. On this outline, in a bracketed section, I had this first, this is years ago already, had this reviewed by Rabbi Lerner, and he made Ha'arot, Lemaisa Ha'arot, where he had other sources who disagreed with me on something, so you have that here as well. I can't tell you that we're covering every shita. I still forward you to your own personal poskim for things. I don't need to negate any of those, but was it not working? I'm on recording here. Should everyone on the website know the code to my car?
Not just that, but why are you terror as well?
That's what I mean. Otherwise, I'm going to have to come out. And then you can entertain the internet crowd while I... It's play with those numbers. There's only five of them. Yeah, anyway. So anyway, that's what this is. So you do not need this. I do have a feeling we're going to be taking an interruption for 2 minutes because I don't know the code to my car. I just got to go like that. So, etc. Okay. But because of, let's begin. I will take questions at the end. I think that will be a lot healthier. So as I say something, if you have a question, I gave you a piece of paper. Write it down. Because otherwise, it will just get frustrating to everyone. And I will take questions at the end. Okay. Isser Matzah be'erev Pesach. We start our halachos of the Seder already before the Seder. I believe that everyone is aware that there is a prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach. Again, a lot of this is not exactly repeat for those girls in the Haggadah class, but we touched on all of this in the Haggadah class in one variety of another. Today is halacha l'maisa. Okay? I do a little bit of theory just so that you understand the halacha l'maisa, but it's halacha l'maisa. There are many people who have a minhag not to be eating matzah already now, or already from Purim, or already from Rosh Chodesh. Those are all minhagim. But there is a halacha. The halacha is that one does not eat matzah on Erev Pesach, and that is, it's a derabbanan, but that is already the halacha. When does this halakha kick in? There are different opinions. The overwhelming majority opinion, and the one, therefore, that we follow is from the morning. From the morning, if you would like to eat your matzah brai, because there's nothing else to eat when you've kashered your house, at Bedikas Chametz night, you can assume that that is fine. Minhag asad, the morning, alas hashakar, from the morning, halakhically, one does not eat matzah. The two main reasons for this, which are really one reason, is we want to eat matzah with excitement, and therefore, either we don't eat anything that tastes like matzah the day of Erev Pesach, or we want to make a break between matzah that was permissible. We want to make a break between the matzah that was permissible versus the matzah that is obligatory, like on Erev Rosh Hashanah, etc. And therefore, we take a break. The difference between those opinions, therefore, is what if you eat matzah that doesn't taste like matzah? Or what if you eat matzah that tastes like matzah, but it doesn't, you can't be yotzei with it. So you're going to hold that thought, and Rabbi Manning is going to entertain, you gave this to me, is going to entertain you for one.
We will just pause this, shall we?
Now, what are we talking about today, ladies?
You.
Certainly not. Definitely not. Outrageous. What are we talking about? The shift from matzah. Let me give you my two pieces of advice for a successful Seder night. Just free with the fees. It's not getting recorded. The first piece of advice I would give is if anyone wants to give Divrei Torah on during the Haggadah, make sure they are A, relevant, and not some weird gematria of something the kid learns, sinemedresh of a something. I mean, in other words, things which are not relevant to Maggid are a hefsek in Haggadah. We at the Mannings try to make sure the following rule is observed, which is, you can say anything you like which is relevant to the Haggadah during Maggid as long as it can be said in 2 minutes or less. If you cannot spend, if you cannot be 2 minutes or less, then you can say during the meal, Besimcha Rabba. And the meal can go on for hours and hours, and all the lengthy, rambling Divrei Torah can all happen during the meal where everybody's eating and happy and relaxed. But during Maggid, when people are hungry and don't want to hear all that, then my suggestion is not. My other suggestion, and this is, you know, based on the halachic issues, Rabbi Katz might talk about it, is that during Maggid, it is also to drink wine, but it's mutter to drink other drinks. Therefore, if you need a glass of Coke or a cup of coffee or something like that during the Maggid to keep you focused and to keep everybody happy, I've found that to be successful in the past, and some people don't know about it.
But sorry. You'll merge the two parts. Yeah, okay. Anyhow, so there are two logics behind the not eating matzah and Erev Pesach. One is we want to break between what you're not Yotzei with to what you are Yotzei with, or excitement, taste, we want it to be a fresh taste. The difference is, again, what if you have something that you can't be Yotzei with, but it tastes like matzah, or something that you can be Yotzei with, but it doesn't taste like matzah, that type of issue. And now I'll put some examples to you. You tell me what you think. You can't eat matzah from the morning of Pesach. Can you eat matzah meal? Logic would dictate no. Why? Because it's matzah. Meaning, ideal, it doesn't taste like matzah. You eat a piece of cake made out of matzah meal, it doesn't taste like matzah. But technically, if you were to take matzah, let's say you're 90 years old and have no teeth, and you would grind up your matzah and turn it into matzah meal and chug it Pesach night, you'd be Yotzei. So since b'di'evid you're Yotzei that way, there, you shouldn't eat matzah meal products either. That's why you starve on Erev Pesach. You can't eat chametz after a certain hour. You can't eat matzah, nor can you eat matzah products. Rabbi Lerner points out in the notes that there are people who are makel for boiled, as opposed to bake, boiled matzah meal. That doesn't help you when it's not Shabbos unless you really like knedelach. Like, it's not, yeah, okay. So it's not going to overly help you. You can't eat cake. You can't eat, in other words, you can't do anything with matzah on Erev Pesach. Egg matzah. Some people eat egg matzah. That's how they solve this problem. You can't be Yotzei with egg matzah at the Seder. It's not flour and water. It's got other things in it. Does egg matzah taste like matzah? Not so much. So, close. And therefore, there are people who eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach. However, for the Ashkenazim in the room, the few of you, the Ashkenazim in the room, we view egg matzah as if it is chametz. You can own it, and a sick person can eat it, but we don't eat egg matzah. Ashkenazim don't eat egg matzah on Pesach. We treat it as chametz. So therefore, after the fifth hour, whenever you can't eat chametz, thank you very much, you can't eat egg matzah either. Sfardim would have a different approach to that. I point this out because those of you staying in Israel, in particular, there's a very popular thing called matzah ashira. It comes in cookie or cake form. Matzah ashira. It's basically matzah, it's egg matzah, but it sounds really appetizing, but they mold it into a cookie shape. It's a very good thing to eat after your apartments are cleaned for Pesach, or your house, are cleaned for Pesach, and you're not allowed to have chametz in your apartment anymore, but you actually want to eat something, so you go to the store, it's called matzah ashira. A lot of the cakes and cookies are made out of it, and everybody eats it. Sfardim eat that on Pesach. So, same problem for Ashkenazim. That is, it's not matzah, you could eat it on Erev Pesach, but we view it as chametz. And therefore, there's the Isser matzah on Erev Pesach, matzah meal, again, boiled versus baked, but you can't eat matzah meal either. Egg matzah, if your Ashkenaz doesn't help you so much. Matzah ashira, be careful with that here in Israel, because it's out there a lot. Doesn't help you so much, and that is that prohibition. Okay? Good. Bet. Leaning. Everybody knows one leans at the Seder. One leans at the Seder, in particular, for matzah and for the four cups. That is when one leans. One also can lean during the rest of the Seder. We'll talk about karpas later. One can lean through the rest of the meal. It's a sign of freedom. But the halacha of leaning, where it's, oh, you need to lean, is matzah and the dalid kosos. How does one lean? One leans to the left, not to the right, not on your back. People know that. We're afraid you're going to choke. Whether that's biologically true or not, what one could debate. I believe my wife thinks yes. But you lean to the left with a pillow, without a pillow. The better way to do it is with a pillow. That's called leaning. There's only one small, tiny little thing. For the Ashkenazim in the room, the few of you, Minhag Ashkenaz, as quoted in the Rambam, was that women never adopted upon themselves the halacha of leaning. Why? Because back in the ancient days, if you were not in a position to act free, to prostrate oneself, to... Sorry for the people on the recording who aren't seeing what I'm doing. But, you know, etc., that wasn't the nature of women. And therefore, when the Gemara says that women don't lean, but if you're important, you do, the question is whether when nowadays all women are important. So no, that's not a joke. Nowadays all women are important. They're you know, we may not pay them the appropriate amount of money for doing the same work as a man, but I digress. But they are in fact important, and therefore they should lean. But in Ashkenaz land, the minhag never developed that women actually did that. And therefore, the Rambam writes, they are relying on the opinion that since leaning nowadays does not show anything, leaning nowadays is a symbolic act, but on a day-to-day, a free person does not lean either. And therefore, we do it, but women never wound up adopting it, and they don't have to. This is the opinion of the Ra'av Yah, for those that know what I'm talking about. So therefore, Ashkenaz women, the minhag is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, is that one doesn't have to, or they don't, not that you can't, but that they don't lean. Sephardi girls, this was not the practice. The Pesach in Shulchan Aruch is that women, as I said, everybody agrees they're important nowadays, and women lean. So the Sephardim among you should lean for Dalet Kosos and for Matzah on your left. And if you don't lean, this you have to ask your Sephardi Peskim. This I don't know whether you would repeat. I think you would. Matzah I'm talking about right now. Dalet Kosos not. Matzah you would have to eat again. Ashkenazim, however, the minhag was in Ashkenaz not to lean. That doesn't mean that you can't lean. You can lean. However, if you weren't to lean, and then you say, oh, I normally lean and I forgot, you would not have to go back and eat matzah again. You could rely very simply on the Ramah, according to Rav Yah, that women do not have to lean. So that is basically the story of leaning. Ashkenaz, if you want, okay, but you don't have to. Sfard, you have to. Matzah, Dalet Kosos, leaning on your left, and that's the issue. Gimel, okay, and this one is obviously going to take us a little bit more time. Wine versus grape juice. Okay, you need a little background. It is not Pesach anymore. It is now a regular Kiddush. It's now a regular Friday night. Are you allowed to use grape juice? By the way, I have tshuva literature on this topic. It's fascinating and fun. Anyone want to guess when this tshuva literature was written? Not a long time ago. When was this the burning issue in the community, whether you can use grape juice as opposed to the prohibition? Correct. So in the early 1900s in America is when the tshuva literature came out. The Reform movement was the first one to put out a tshuva, matzah and grape juice. The Orthodox establishment went nuts. How dare you change the Masorah and all these. And then 30, 40 years later, when the Orthodox finally got their act together, guess all the source work that they quoted? Well, the exact same source work that the Reform movement had written 30 years earlier. I have it. It's fascinating stuff. Anyway, there was a lot of politics involved and who gets to control the alcohol and the kickbacks on the money. Fascinating stuff. The world hasn't changed. Anyway, wine or grape juice on a regular Shabbos. There are three issues with grape juice, even on a regular Shabbos. So let's go through them and then dispel them. Number one, what bracha do you say on grape juice? So we say Borei Pri HaGafen. According to Rashi, however, it's Shahakol. Anytime you would, let's say, and this is true for wine too, if it's Mavushal, anytime you boil a vegetable or the juice of the vegetable, it would lose its original status and the bracha would become Shahakol as opposed to the higher level bracha. Therefore, since grape juice in general, although I found out last year the hard way, as did Rabbi Lerner, that not all grape juice is mavushal. I didn't know that. We always teach everyone that grape juice, by definition, you cook it. It's apparently not true. But in theory, grape juice is mavushal. According to Rashi, it loses its Borei Pri HaGafen, and then you obviously cannot use it for Kiddush on any Friday night of the year, no less on Pesach. But we don't paskin like Rashi. So that problem goes away. Second issue. There's a Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Tzadi Zayin. The Gemara in Baba Basra says that for Kiddush, you need to use a wine, or for our purposes, a grape juice, but a beverage, a wine, that is ra'uy linaseh al gabei hamizbeach. a wine that they could have used on the Mizbeach for the Nisuch Hayayin. Well, there was a rule, we did this in our Gutta class yesterday, that on the Mizbeach, you could never put anything on it that was, well, we talked about chametz, but that has sugar, or that has fermenting agents. You were not allowed to put anything, flavorings, anything like that, artificial ingredients, none of that would be allowed on the Mizbeach. And therefore, if you take that Gemara at face value, grape juice loses its status, the Rambam paskens this way, la halacha, that you cannot use anything like that, it's not ra'oi, l'nasech, agabay on Mizbeach, you wouldn't be able to use it for a regular Kiddush. Good news is, we do not paskin this way. Ah, the Gemara says it. The non-Rambam opinions will say that what the Gemara means is anything that's inferior, that you wouldn't use on the Mizbeach, not because of the sugar or the flip. That's not the issue. It means you don't use for Kiddush, blech, Israeli, yuch, that was Dibat Haris, I didn't mean that, but you know what I mean. Disgusting wine that you wouldn't use for Kiddush. And not that it has anything to do with the sugar or the flavorings or the cooked status or anything like that, and therefore that is not a problem. What's the biggest problem or the most popular problem with grape juice? What's it lacking? Alcohol. And therefore, you might think that you are not allowed to use it even for a regular Kiddush. Same Gemara in Baba Basra, however, tells us that a person is allowed to take... This is perfect. Thank you, whoever brought all three of you. You're missing a cup. A cluster of grapes, and you are allowed to squeeze them right into the cup and make Kiddush on it. Well, if you take juice straight out of a grape into a cup and make Kiddush on it, what are you drinking?
Grape juice.
The Gemara says for Kiddush that is perfectly acceptable. So, obviously, you don't need alcohol, apparently. So, there are those that wanted to claim that the reason the Gemara says that is because if you would leave that cup of grape juice that you just squeezed sitting out, squeeze, here we go again, Gemara class, squeeze, if you would squeeze it right into the cup and you would leave it for a week sitting out, what would happen to it? It would ferment and turn into wine. But if you leave your Kedem grape juice poured out of the bottle into a cup and leave it for a week, what would happen to it? Nothing. I mean, it would become gross, you might get bugs, but not, it wouldn't ferment because it's been treated. And therefore, there are those that want to claim that you can't use. It needs to either be alcoholic or fresh or something that would become grape juice. So but we don't paskin that way either. These are the three issues. So since we don't paskin that way, for Kiddush, you can use grape juice. The prohibition issues are over. We don't paskin like any of it. It's all good. Grape juice is perfectly fine. But what about on Pesach? Pesach, there's another factor, and that's called chayrus, freedom. The Gemara tells us that on Pesach, the Dalet Kosos is an expression of freedom. And the general assumption is that part of that expression of freedom is alcohol. Alcohol, whatever the alcohol content, it doesn't have to be 12%. And by the way, there is such a thing called Yayin Kal, and you can get 3% and 4% and have alcohol in your wine and not get drunk on it either, and not get sick from it if you have a problem like I do with alcohol. But that you can have. So the assumption is that it needs to be alcoholic. This is the psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Very clearly, it needs to be chayrus, which means intoxicated. However, with Soloveitchik, based on a Rambam, the Rambam writes that your Dalet Kosos need to be a shtia areva, a pleasant drinking. And if you think about it, let's say you hate wine. Let's say you hate wine or it makes you sick. And it's supposed to be a shtia areva, and it's supposed to be a sign of chayrus. It's supposed to be a sign of freedom. So therefore, wouldn't it be better to drink grape juice? And in fact, that's what Rav Soloveitchik felt, that the Gemara never said it needs to be intoxicating, that most Mepharshim interpreted it, but it's lav dafka. The Rambam says shtia areva, and it's more of a sign of chayrus if you like grape juice. And therefore, Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion that grape juice is certainly acceptable and maybe even preferable, depending on your own personal subjective taste. etc. So we have the debate, wine versus grape juice. So what should you do? So my advice here is A, obviously family minhag. B, if you're going to get sick from wine, then drink grape juice. It's perfectly acceptable for all the reasons that we spoke about. However, if you dafka like wine, or wine is fine for you and it's really an issue, I would say you should take wine, believe it or not. I would say that you should use wine. It's legal in every state except New Mexico for ceremonial purposes, I believe. In England, it's not only permissible, it's like required because Brits drink. But wine, isn't it true? Yeah, no? Says no shabbat. Anyway, but I would think that wine is in fact preferable, maximum opinion compliance, if you will, etc. You don't need to take 15% wine or 12% wine, and therefore if you would like to have wine but you're worried about the headache, then I would suggest in Israel for sure, I assume in America also, but in Israel you can buy what's called Yayin Kal. It's 3%, 4%, and which is like candy, except for me, my head spins even with that. But that would be my suggestion. Yes, you can split, you can mix, by the way, also. So if you mix grape juice and wine, that gives you some alcohol, but mostly not alcohol. And you can also do wine for some of the cups and not others of the cups. And you can do that as well. And everybody's got a whole tirade of whether it should be the first cup. I personally would drink alcohol for the last cup because then you go to sleep. And you're on a full stomach as opposed to on an empty stomach, but different people do different things. But this is the issue. I will point out as we move along on the chart, however, that if you were to ask me what's better, to be really, really, really stark and firm and have a cup that's Shia Chazanish, which we'll get to in a minute, but therefore you're going to need to have grape juice. So my personal weighing of those issues is better to use a smaller cup, as long as it's a shear, a smaller shear, and use wine. Because again, I'm trying to balance the shitot and which one is preferable and not. That's the way I balance it. It could be that your personal poskim would balance that differently, and I obviously don't want to negate that, but if you're asking me, I'm getting the shear. So that would be what I would tell you, that would be what I would tell you to do. How large must this cup be? We're moving along on your chart there. Shear, dalid kosa. So I gave you the amounts here. In America, the poskim there of Moshe Feinstein in general, the famous one, Shimon Eider, if you read any of the self-help books on Pesach, they quote you 3.3 fluid ounces. You can do your own math on there on how much that is in milliliters. I haven't the foggiest idea. Okay? But 3.3 fluid ounces, and I don't know because the books are all written in America. But 3.3 fluid ounces is your standard shear. However, Pesach this year is on Friday night. The first cup on a Shabbos is d'oraita. Is the wine d'oraita or only the text? That's a tosvos in Arvei Pesachim on Daf Kuf Zayin, and it's not for now. And if you're in Rabbi Manning's class, I hope you learned it, or in Hilchos Shabbos or whatever. But Friday night, the first cup, whoever makes Kiddush is d'oraita. And since the minhag of most families, or many families, is that everybody says Kiddush together. So if you're being yotzei with your own Kiddush, you would need a slightly larger shear because it's d'oraita and we want to be more machmir. That's 4.4. That's at the end of your list there. That's 4.4 fluid ounces. So on a normal year for an American Jew who follows Rav Moshe as the standard minhag, 3.3. For regular cups, Friday night, which is this year in particular, so then you would opt for the 4.4 for the first cup, and you could downgrade on the others. But it doesn't matter, because it's the cup, okay? It's the cup. You're not going to change cups in the middle of your meal necessarily, unless you're being so careful about it because you get sick, alcohol, this, that. 3.3, 4.4. If you want to use Shir Chazanish, because you decide you want to be Machmir on Pesach, so that's 5.07 fluid ounces. Here I do know the milliliters. It's 150 milliliters. Okay? Now, how are you supposed to know how big your cup is? Measure it. Now, how do you measure a cup? It's not like you're drinking out of a gradiated or whatever it's called, graded syringe or whatever. So what you do is you take the cup that you think you want to use, fill it with water, and then pour it into a measuring cup. Or to another vessel that you know the size of, because it's in that cup it says on the bottom, and then just know. You can take a larger cup, we'll get to that in a minute, but then you're going to get into a problem. So these are the minimum sizes. Ideally 3.3, First cup 4.4, Shir Chazanish is slightly larger. However, the minimum size, according to the more lenient Israeli poskim, is slightly less. It's 86 milliliters. How do you know that it's 86? It's the gematria of Kos. That's how I remember it. 86 milliliters, it's roughly 2.9 fluid ounces, which is a little bit smaller. That is the shear of Rav Chaim Na'ah. That is a smaller shear. By the way, do you know what the machlok is based on all the sizes of these things? How thick human thumbs are, and did our thumbs get bigger or smaller at a different time? The shear Chazanish is based on the Nodabi Yehuda, who measured the eggs and determined that our eggs changed sizes, and therefore all the shearim are doubled, and that becomes more relevant by matzah. All these things are connected. So, again, if you're asking me how big your cup has to be minimally, I would say 3.3/4.4. Most cups are larger. I personally use Shir Chazanish, and often my cups are larger because often a regular cup that you buy in a fancy store is 180 or 160. It just depends. Okay, that's the size of your cup. How much of that cup must you drink? So on a regular Friday night, who knows what the rule is? What? No, on a regular Friday night. It is melol lugma, which is roughly cheekful. Thank you very much. How much is that? It's a rov revius. And therefore, if your cup on a Friday night happens to be, I don't know, 150 milliliters, let's say you're working with Shir Chazanish. So on a regular Friday night, you need to drink 75.1 of those milliliters. It happens to be Rav Kos, because the Kos itself is a revius. However, Pesach is a different halacha. You know how much of the cup you have to drink, no matter how big that cup is? You have to drink the whole cup. However, there's a halacha that says if you drank most of it, it's as if you drank the whole. And therefore, lichadchila, whatever cup size you choose, now you understand why it's important to know how big your cup is? Because you're not drinking rov. Ideally, you're drinking the whole thing, so you should get a smaller cup. A shear, but a smaller one, so that you can drink all of it. If you can't drink all of it, then you will drink half of it, at least, and that's good. But you can't drink less than that. But if you take a cup that's 10 ounces, you decide to drink out of a barrel, you have to at least drink half the barrel, then use grape juice. But then you have to drink at least half. So rove with a question mark, yes, rove works, but ideally you should be drinking 4 full cups. So that's in terms of the rove coast thing. And again, on a regular Shabbos, that is not the case. Is it better to have wine or to drink the whole cup? So I'm not so sure. Again, I think wine is preferable there. I think if you're going to drink wine and only drink rove, that's good. But therefore, I spend the energy to tell you that you should spend the time looking at the size of your cup and making sure that you're not going to get drunk and making sure that you're not going to get sick and making sure that you are, in fact, able to at least drink rove and handle the size of it. Legima achat. Pet peeve time. And thank you for the visual aids here. When you drink, this is the proper, oh, I got 3 cups, perfect. This is the ideal way to drink your cup. Remember, leaning if you're leaning, right? Oh. That is the best way to drink your Dalet Kosos. The whole cup, filled to the top, by the way, none of that half cup business, filled to the top, whole cup, chug. If you cannot chug, especially if you're drinking wine, if you cannot chug, so do it in 2 sips, in 2 gulps, better, okay? What you should not do is the following, and this is a pet peeve of mine. Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Bo'i Rei Pri Hagafen. Oh my gosh, I'm drinking wine. Ooh, it's tart. Get the point? Often people, they take their little sip, and it takes them 25 minutes to down the Rove Kos, if they do that at all. And in the meantime, they're talking, they're giggling. That's not the appropriate way to do it. And therefore, legima achat is the ideal. So when your brothers came home from yeshiva and started doing this, no, they're not crazy. That is the best way to, but it may be crazy, but that is the best way to do it. If you can't do it in legima achat, you do it in two gulps. Better, again, at least till the rov. At least you get down to rov kos. You want to sip the rest, then it, you can, but it doesn't overly help you. That's better, but you shouldn't do it with the joking way. If you happen to be sipping your cup, not because you're interrupting, not because you're having five conversations in the meantime, but you happen to actually just sip it and you need to do it slowly and whatever, but b'dieved you are still yotze, up till 9 minutes, I believe, which is an endless amount of time for drinking a cup of wine, you're still yotze if you do that, but you'll see in my notes, again, Rabbi Lerner points out that you're still yotze, but I point out, don't do it. You're 19 years old. You can drink a cup, and you should do it, and you should do it properly. Okay. Karpas. Karpas. We are up to karpas. We are doing well. Karpas. Karpas is a ha'adama. When you eat the karpas, you are supposed to have in mind that the bracha of the ha'adama is going to cover later the maror. You should have that in mind. And it's any ha'adama that you like. I wouldn't use licorice. Is licorice shahakal? Is licorice mazonis? Is licorice... No, I don't mean licorice. I'm just saying, people use bananas. You could use whatever you want that isn't disgusting being dipped in salt water, but you can use whatever you want, and karpas. How much karpas does one eat? In theory, one eats less than a kazayas. I cannot tell you how much a kazayas is of your karpas. In theory, one eats less than a kazayas. However, if your family minig is to eat more than a kazayas, as is mine, then that's what you will do. If you eat more than a kazayas, you lean for it, if you lean. And that's it. But if it's not your minig to eat more than a kazayas, you should not eat more than a kazayas, you should eat less than a kazayas, you don't lean for it, we do not say a bracha achrona afterwards, because we have in mind that it's going to go for the maror later, and that is really all you need to know about karpas. Matzah. Matzah is obviously the harder one. First of all, let's talk about shmura versus non-shmura matzah. There are two reasons one would prefer to have, in general, on Pesach, shmura matzah. The Torah says, "Ushmartem et hamatzah." You should guard, you should watch your matzah. There's two reasons for it. One might be, why do you want to guard your matzah? To make sure that it doesn't become... primates. It's very hard to make matzah. 18 minutes in 1 second, it's already, the little bit of water gets in there, etc. So, ushmartem et hamatzos, be very careful. Or, it's possible that this is part of the kiyum mitzvah of matzah. It's part of the kiyum mitzvah of matzah. And that when you eat matzah, there's an extra level, kind of like l'shem matzos mitzvah. You're going to go matzah baking, some of you. So, l'shem matzos mitzvah, it's extra kavana ushmartem et hamatzah. The difference between those two positions is, if it's to protect you from chametz, it would apply all 8 days, 7 days, 8 days. If it's a kiyum in the eating of matzah, that's only Pesach night for Seder. And therefore, in general, we paskin, it's only a kiyum of eating matzah at the Seder, and therefore shmura matzah is the way to go. We'll talk about hands versus machine in a minute, but shmura matzah is the way to go at the Seder. The rest of Pesach, some people only eat shmura matzah for the other reason, but that's more of a minhag or a chumrah. In my house, we only eat shmura matzah because Pesach we get off rim like that, with one exception. Cake meal. The shmura cake meal ruins my wife's cookies. And my wife makes a mean chocolate chip cookie for Pesach. You wouldn't know it's Pesach. So for that, we're making. So for that, we don't, it's only a minhag. For that, we use regular matzah meal, regular cake meal. But in general, we only serve shmura matzah. It's more expensive, but you don't have to. Shmura for the rest of the week is not necessary. But at the Seder, shmura matzah becomes this extra key and becomes, quote-unquote, necessary. Let's say you cannot get shmura matzah. Now, I don't know anybody who can't get shmura matzah. But you're in somebody else's house, and they don't have, they didn't bring enough, etc. So you should know that b'dieved it's okay, because even non-shmura matzah is still shmura matzah, just from a later stage in its processing. So regular matzah is okay too, but minhag olam is to be makbid for shmura matzah for the Seder, and that's what you should do. Machine or hand? Machine or hand? The minhag in general in the world at the Seder, and I say in general very loosely here, is to use hand. That's historical because that's what your great-great-grandparents did, so that's what we all do, and we eat hand matzah. Many people use machine matzah. They like the taste better. It's cheaper. Whatever the case. Whatever the case may be. And that's fine also. What are the issues? It was a whole debate, again, 50, 60 years ago. What was the whole debate? Number one, can you clean the machines properly in between the run? Nowadays, we have real good technology. We assume we can properly clean the machines between the runs, number one. Number two, can you have kavanah, l'shem matzah mitzvah, on a machine when you push the button? So that is debatable. So again, there was a preference for hand, but machine nowadays is perfectly acceptable and nobody really doubts that. So again, you can follow your own family minhag on this, but if somebody does have hand now, you understand where it came from. And again, I think if you just look around people's time, I think that's what most people buy for their Seder. How much must you eat? The question that everybody hates. How much must you eat? So I wrote it on your chart here in a way that you cannot understand it. That's why you have to attend the Shia. We eat matzah three times. We eat matzah for motzi matzah. We eat matzah for the sandwich, for korech. And then at the end, we eat it again for afikomen. Since korech is only a zecher l'mikdash kehillel, and matzah and afikomen, one of them at least, is the mitzvah d'oraita, of eating matzah. Therefore, again, the no to be Yehuda thing, the double shear, oh my gosh, maybe we have to eat more than we thought because the eggs have changed, etc., kicks in, and that's why double. So for matzah and afikomen, you eat two-thirds of a machine, the parentheses is machine, two-thirds of a machine matzah, but for korech, only one-third of a machine matzah. If you're eating hand matzah, which again, I think most people are doing, half of a hand matzah, but for korech, only, I'll take questions at the end, for korech, only a quarter. Now, some of you might say, one second, these shiurim are quite large. I'm not used to that, or I have the Rav Rimon Agada. In the Rav Rimon Agada, there's a picture. And in the Rav Rimon picture, in the Agada, he said, etc. So let me tell you. It depends how thick they are. It's a volume. But you don't know what the volume is. So over the years, different books were written with different sizes. If you have very thick matzah, so how do you know how thick your matzahs are? When you buy the box, you know. So Rabbi Lerner claims if you've got six matzahs to a pound, which is roughly 13, 14 matzahs to a kilo, which is pretty approximate to what, when you buy matzah here, what it comes out to be, he says then you can cut the shear down. So not a half, quarter half, but a third, and then you'd have to do the math, a sixth. A third, a sixth, a third. I personally think, especially when you're dealing with a mitzvah d'oraita, that you should go for the double shear with the larger amount. Why? A, because you're healthy, so why not? But B, human psychology. You'll have to use your imagination. I'm holding a piece of matzah. This is now a double shear. When you get to that last piece and your stomach just can't hold it anymore, what is normal human nature to do? I'm done. If you start with a double shear and you become a normal human being, okay, so you're still within not only a double shear, not only a single shear, or even maybe within a double shear of somebody else. But if you start with the minimum amount in your hand, you will not be yotzei. That is just human nature, because you, certainly for afikomen, you just will not finish it. And therefore, that is my suggestion. Healthy people, people that aren't the gluten issues and anything else, should I think, go for the double shear. Again, two-thirds, a third, two-thirds, a half, quarter, a half. However, if your family is different, you have a book that measures it out for you, etc. How fast do you have to eat it? So it says on your sheet here, 4 minutes or 9 minutes. What do I mean? It's really 2 minutes. Every kezias is 2 minutes. If you eat a double shear, which is what I'm encouraging you to do, then it is 4 minutes. Korech, however, is 9 minutes, because korech is only a zecher l'mikdash. Matzah is d'oraita. Afikomen, again, we treat them both as d'oraita, because, well, only one of them is, but we treat them as d'oraitas, and therefore you have 4 minutes. So again, when you see your brother sitting there chomping up the matzah before they start sticking it in their mouth, from the moment you start sticking it in your mouth, that's normal. That is normal, because that's the way to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraita. So it's 2 minutes, but if you start with a smaller shear, again, you've got 2 minutes. Not 9 minutes. Not 40, 2 minutes. Okay? So that's why you have to know how much are you eating, how much time do you have. And again, the way to eat matzah is leaning, if you lean, with attention, with kavana, I'm fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraita, chug it, stick it down your mouth, stuff it down in a normal, healthy way, but chug it down, but not that, oh, this is gross. It's everybody, but at least on your side of the distaff world. I'm just saying, you should eat it in a normal, kavana way, you're fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraita. So that is in terms of how much matzah. Have you ever seen anybody stuff it into their mouth and swallow it in one gulp? Yeah, okay. So that, again, might be the best way to do it. I do not promote that. I barely even teach it. It's not on your thing. But if you see somebody doing it, it's correct. By the way, one of the proofs for the double kezias, just to gross you out, the Gemara in Yuma tells us that how much can the human throat hold at one time? 2 kezasim. Otherwise known as a kibetza. 2 kezasim, that's what fits in the human throat. So that part of the proof of the no de Yehuda on the double shear is, you're supposed to put and then gulp 2 kezasim down all at once. I am not promoting that, but if you see that, you go to the Shields house for Pesach, and you see Papa Shields do that, so know that that is, that's not a Beis Yaakov thing, know where that is actually coming from. Okay. Moving along. Maror and maror for Korech. The best thing to use for maror is lettuce, not horseradish. Why? So that you actually fulfill the mitzvah. Because you try to down a kezias of real horseradish. Yeah. There is no rule that it has to be bitter. Lettuce is not bitter. The reason maror is maror is because lettuce, if you were to leave it in the ground longer, then it would become bitter and more bitter. So too, the slavery in Egypt. It started off, okay, we could bear it, and then it got more and more bitter. So lettuce, symbolically, says the Gemara, is the best food item anyhow for maror, even though it's not bitter, and you can actually eat a shear. If your family minhag, however, is to have horseradish, what I would advise you to do is put a little on your lettuce. But eat lettuce. So here you might actually have to break with family minhag and say to your parents, I really want to use lettuce, but we don't use lettuce. And then you need to have the conversation. But that's what I would tell you to do. I would tell you to use lettuce. Make sure it is bug-free lettuce, or at least have been checked, aka Mrs. Katz, for bugs. That's in terms of lettuce. How much? So it says it right here. For those of you not on the metric system, 8 by 10 inches. What I advise people to do is take a piece of paper. This is Israeli paper, it's A4, but if you have an American piece of paper, here, how big is an American piece of paper? 8.5 by 11. So you don't need to fill the piece of paper. Approximately, this is roughly the size. Now, if you look in Rav Rimon Zagada, or in the Kazayas book, it will tell you one large leaf with the stalk. Now, the reason for that is very simple. The stalk has more condensed volume than the leaf. Remember, it's volume. So what I advise people again to do is take the piece of paper approximately this size, your stalk makes up for the parts on the paper that you're not covering with your leaf, and give or take, you're okay. Okay? Now, I don't know if this is to size, because you can't see, but this is not filling this piece of paper at all, but it's pretty close. But there's a stalk, which again makes it. So again, this is approximate. If you're eating lettuce, if you ask me, girls eat salad all the time, I don't think this is such a big deal. And that way, it's only a mitzvah d'rabbanan, but I think you are covered. But that's where you get the different sizes from. Again, to me, it's lettuce. I would just add on extra and just be careful. But again, those are the basic ideas. Chaloset is not even on your list because it is part. And maror and karek, by the way, the same amount of maror. The matzah you cut in half if you're eating a double shear for matzah, but the maror is the same amount. Chaloset. You're not going to like what I have to say. The halacha, there's a debate whether you eat the charoset or whether you shake it off. The purpose of the charoset is to diffuse the bitter taste, even though it's not bitter, the bitter taste, and you get ill from the bitter, of the maror. So this is the famous example of being notain trufa lefnei hamakah, that the cure comes before the illness, chayoset. However, there is a debate whether you're really supposed to eat it or whether it's more symbolic or dipping. You're supposed to dip, not spoon it on. You're supposed to dip the maror in chayoset. And there's a debate whether you're supposed to eat it or not. The psak in Shulchan Aruch, the majority psak in Shulchan Aruch is that you dip, you sure have to do it, and you shake it off. You want to eat chayoset, eat it later at the meal, but you're supposed to shake it off. Now, let's be fair. How many of you are really shaking off your chayoset? So, good. So what people do is like this. First of all, you should dip, okay? Not spoon. So in my family, God bless my children, they go, oh, it's a running joke in my house. We're dipping. And then they take the spoon and then they load it on. But we dipped. That's important because the minhag, the halacha, is to dip. Dip the maror in the... You're supposed to dip. And then you're really supposed to shake off. So what my kids do is they dip, they shake off, and then they spoon it on, and they say, we're covering all shito, Abba, we're briskers. Thank you very much. The psak is really not supposed to do that. Again, I put it out there, there are different opinions. For kolich, do you use chayoset? Some people do, and some people don't. But the people who do are supposed to shake it off. So it's not supposed to be a matzah maror chayoset extravagant sandwich. Who am I? What can I tell you? So that's the story. You'll read about it how I wrote it in the notes, and you'll get there. We are almost done with this part, and then we'll have a few minutes for questions. We're doing well. You're not going to like the next part either. Not eating after the afikomen. Everybody knows that one is not allowed to eat after the afikomen. What are you not allowed to eat after the afikomen? Anything. You are not allowed to eat after the afikomen in theory until the morning. You are not supposed to eat until the morning. Drinking. Are you allowed to drink after the afikomen? No. This is a debate. Yes, we do drink the two cups after the afikomen, that is true. Water can be drunk after the afikomen, that is true. Other beverages cannot be drunk after the afikomen unless you really need them. So if somebody, for example, needs to take a pill right before they go to sleep and they can't take it with water and they need to take it with orange juice. So other beverages other than wine, you cannot drink wine other than the two cups till the morning, that is for sure. Or grape juice for that matter. Other beverages, b'di'evit, if you're not feeling well, you can. This is all the psak and Shulchan Aruch. It's a big machloket, but all psak. But other than that, one is not supposed to do that. When do you need to eat the afikomen by? Katzot, ideally. But this is a machloket. Many people are not machbit on that. And if therefore your family does not get up to afikomen until later, so be it. Again, different minhagim on this. We're all trained katzot. But again, it's not absolute. Different minhagim. Anyone interested in this topic should listen to the recording of the class in Torah Mitzvah on Rupture and Reconstruction. If you really, really, really want to be frum, and you want to be makbid on chatzot, but the people around you aren't, you can pull the following shtick of the Avnei Nezer, the Sacha Chava Rebbe. I promised in Haggadah class, or in Torah Mitzvah, that we talk about this. Says the Avnei Nezer, when's the last time to eat the afikomen? It's a machloket. Are you allowed to eat after the afikomen? No, until the morning. Says the Avnei Nezer, you're not allowed to eat after the afikomen until the morning, only if you hold that you can be eating the afikomen until the morning. If you hold that you can eat the afikomen only until chatzot, then you can eat immediately after chatzot. That's the Avnei Nezer. So what does he say to do? He says, if you're stuck and it's 2 minutes to midnight, eat two kezesim for afikomen, wait the extra 5 minutes until chatzot, finish your meal, and then eat another two kezesim for that shita, because you have until the morning, and then don't eat until the morning. So if you would like to eat 7 kezesim of matzah instead of 5, so then you can do the Avnei Nezer, and it's a conversation piece, and you can be very firm. It's a conversation piece before you throw up all over the table. Okay? So that you can do. I mentioned it more for the interest than anything else, but that is a b'shas adchak way to get around it. Brushing teeth. If the whole purpose of not eating after the Afikoman is so that the taste of the matzah remains in your mouth, so wouldn't teeth brushing or mouth washing be a problem?
No.
Yes. And therefore, I never really knew this until a couple years ago when I made the mistake of reading about it in 2012 on the internet. It was on Torah Musings, Hir Hurim, or whatever it was called. I then discussed it with Rabbi David, my posek, Rabbi Lerner's posek, you know, we all go to Rabbi David. And I said, really? And he said, really? He did say that you can brush your teeth with water, right, with no toothpaste. My goal is not to teach you things that you're then not going to keep and feel guilty about it, but you should know about this. After the soda, really, you can brush your teeth, but you really should not be using toothpaste or mouthwash, at least, and it makes perfect sense in terms of the article. The whole point is, Yishaer Tam Befid. So, I therefore mention that as well. What time is Chatzot if you want to be Makbid? I hope you like my joke on the page. Yishalayim, New York, and Miami. Okay, so Orlando for some of you. But New York, Yerushalayim, I know, Los Angeles, England, I know, I got that. So I only put the times so you can look this up on my Zmanim, you don't need me, but these are approximately your times. The Miami is a joke. It's just a joke. I mean, it's relevant to some of you, but that's why. And finally, and then we'll take questions, eggs. There is a minhag, only a minhag, not a halacha, a minhag of eating eggs at the Seder meal. The reason for this, in short, is because Pesach and Tisha B'Av fall on the same night, Friday night this year. Well, Tisha B'Av will be therefore pushed off to Saturday night, but Friday night, Tisha B'Av, Pesach fall on the same day of the week, and therefore in commemoration of Korban HaBayit, I remind you we don't have a Korban Pesach, therefore eggs are round, they're a symbol of the cycle of life, they're the food item that we give at a mourner's meal, the first meal after the Leviah, etc. And therefore, that's where the minhag of eggs comes. If you do not like eating eggs, you do not need to eat an egg. I hope that now makes me popular again after the no toothbrushing thing. Teeth brushing thing. You do not have to eat an egg. I do not eat an egg at my Seder. You don't have to dip it in salt water. These are all minhagim. Another reason for the egg, by the way, is Zechel Karban Chagiga, all sorts of things, but those are the things. I believe that I have covered everything that is on this list. I don't think I missed anything, and I don't believe that I missed anything in my own notes. So now I'm happy to take your questions. I will cut them off in about 5 minutes, though, so that we have a normal lunch. 5:10, okay? So don't feel that you need to get out of here. Yes?
Do you eat horseradish at your house?
No.
B-Y-O-H,
okay? I do lettuce and only lettuce. By the way, thank you for reminding me, on the lettuce discussion, romaine or iceberg? So Rav Moshe writes romaine. Aaron Cutler apparently was quoted as saying even iceberg. Whatever you're going to be able to eat a shiur of. Nowadays, we're so used to romaine lettuce it's the regular lettuce here in Israel, etc. But if for some reason you hate regular romaine lettuce, and it's got to be your American iceberg lettuce, so, again, Rav Moshe wouldn't have loved it, but others would have, and it's fine. Yeah. So, halachically, yes. The only thing you can't do during Maggid, halachically, in terms of eating and drinking, would be wine. However, you are supposed to treat the Seder meal, even though it doesn't have to be the atmosphere around the table. You can play your games and your plagues and you're carrying your mat and so on. But it's the Haggadah. You're not supposed to be in the meal mode. So I don't advise people flippantly, oh, let's pig out and let's eat and etc. If you want or you need to do that, I do suggest you do what I do at my Seder. I taught in Haggadah. Run through the Haggadah, finish it, eat your matzah, eat your mat, and then expand your meal and do all your Devei Torah then, if you'll do it. If you'll do it. If you can't wait, there's no mitzvah to drag Maggid out in Maggid. The Devei Torah can be the whole night, if you're serious about it, and that solves that problem. But there's no as far as I know, there's no halakhic reason not to. So if you need to drink water in the middle of the Seder, because girls drink water, so I assume girls drink water because they're constantly running out to the bathroom. But if girls drink water, say you'll drink water at the Seder. There's no reason why not. But I wouldn't use it as a pig out opportunity. Remember, I remind you, you haven't eaten matzah yet. Now, the stupidity of this whole thing, it's not stupidity, Chassam, I don't mean that, it's Gemara. The stupidity of this whole thing is that you didn't eat matzah all day because we want you to be excited and hungry for matzah at night. So then you're going to sit at the Seder, eating and eating and eating and eating, and then you're going to get to the matzah. So why is that mutter? The reason is the Gemara, and that's why Chas V'Shalom, I don't mean stupidity, but the question makes, that was the question, in the Maskana stage, Chas V'Shalom, it's not stupid, it makes sense. The Gemara says that during the day you might eat so much and not even think about the meal, and you just won't be careful. At the same meal, when your mom is sitting there eating, you're going to be careful not to fill, and therefore Chazal, we're not worried about that. And therefore, the prohibition of filling up, so to speak, before the matzah only applies during the day and not at the Seder. So it's mutter to eat, but I wouldn't do it. Okay? Yes?
What's considered morning from the eating after
Yom Kippur? Alosa Shachar. Alosa Shachar. So you have to ma'az manim again, and you can...
So if you wake up at 3 in the morning...
Alosa Shachar is... Well, it depends if you've changed your clocks and whatever, but Alosa Shachar is more in the 4-something range, so you have to look at the time if this is relevant to you, and then... You're not going to look it up on the internet on Yom Tov, so print out your ma'az manim daf, and everyone will make fun of you for being, oh my God, you're... whatever it'll be. Okay? Questions? Yes? Sure. Sure. Oh, there is one other halacha I neglected to mention. Thank you for reminding me. Talking. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch, at least the way it's called in the Mishnah Berurah, and it makes perfect sense as well, is not to talk from the time you wash netilat yadayim of rachsa before the meal until after korech. Why? Because if korech is not just a zecher lemikdash for us, but it's the right way to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, that was Hillel's opinion, but not just we're doing it to commemorate Hillel, if we hold like Hillel, which maybe we do, you want the bracha of Arachilas Matzah to cover the Korach. And therefore, that Mishnah Berurah says you shouldn't talk. Now, I don't talk then. We give out all the divvying up and all the instructions before we wash. But most people talk. They're not mapped on this, but I think you shouldn't talk. So I wouldn't eat the Charoset then. I would eat the Charoset after Korach because of that issue. But second question? For Ashkenazim, for eating, not for owning. We view it as chametz regarding that we don't eat it, but you can own it in your house. Because it's not really chametz. We're not been not to eat it. Minhag Ashkenaz was not to eat it. We're afraid it might have become chametz, but it's a chumra. So that's what I'm saying. That's not, it's a chumra. So we're machmir vis-a-vis eating it, but you can own it. Also remember, you can own it because Sfardim eat it. So it's not exactly rice, but it's similar in that way. It's only chametz to you, that's what I'm trying to say, vis-a-vis eating, not owning. That's why people do it, because it's not a problem. On that level, it's like rice. Okay? Yeah?
I know that you're not allowed to break the bones of your carbon pesach, so that like, some people say that you take your time and think about it and eat it properly like a free person, but
counterproductive. Okay, so first of all, from a halakhic perspective, your question on a philosophic level, well taken, but on a halakhic perspective, those are separate halachas. So the idea of the Tanei HaMitzvahs, the reason that they say, hey, you don't break the book, that's cute, and it's nice, and it might be true, and I have no way to know, because God didn't tell me, right? But the halakha of eating a kezias in the proper time frame is still the halakhos of halakhic eating. And the goal of matzah, even though it's nice to have the kavanah and to know what you do, you have to fill the mitzvah. And you have to do that within the parameters, again, oh, this is machloket, etc., but within the parameters you were given. Ideally, yes, you should eat your matzah in the proper time frame with the proper kavanah. No one's telling you to lose sight of the kavanot that you think are the kavanot and remove that from your seder. But if you have to choose, the halakhic parameters come first. Okay? And that's always the danger, so to speak, of Tamei HaMitzvahs. You have to make sure that the Tamei HaMitzvahs, again, maybe I'm coming across like the Misnagid now and not the Chassid, but as the Misnagid giving the Shiur, you need to make sure that the Kavanas that you think are behind the Mitzvah don't overtake the actual Halakhic performance. Okay? If you're a Chassid, it's a whole different conversation. Don't talk to me. Okay? Any other questions? Excellent. Chag Kasher V'Sameach. I don't know how to turn this off.
Red button?
No.
No, yeah, take your...